Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here, of course, on a Thursday morning. Welcome to the show, Marquise Munson. Follow us, of course, on the Twitters, at 102.5 The Game. Derek, how are you, man? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well, man. I think we're having some difficulties here with you hearing yourself.
I'm good, man. Listen, nobody really wants to hear me anyway, so. I don't need to hear myself either. It's fine.
No, you're good. You're good.
James Wiseman and the NCAA. Let's get started right out of the gate here with James Wiseman and the NCAA. And that is the biggest story, I think, that I've seen. We'll get to Phillip Rivers. We'll get to the injury report for the Titans. We got a loaded show when it comes to guests today. We are going behind enemy lines. We got Mike DiRocco.
Ooh, that was the name of the movie, right? Behind enemy lines with, who was in that movie? God,
that's
I
not
figured
the,
out.
That's not the sniper movie from World War II.
It's a war movie. It's sort of like a espionage type of spy movie.
Was there a World War II movie where it was just a sniper who was like in the Soviet front of World War II? And he was like sitting
like
up
20 movies,
but he was a guy who just had to sit. There was like sniper v sniper. It was like a sniper on sniper.
Oh, I know what
you're talking about.
The whole movie was based on them too.
These two guys, and it's a true story. One guy like sat up in a tower, and he was the Russian guy, I think, and was like just like the best sharpshooter in World War II on the Russian side. And then there was like the best sharpshooter in the American side.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Maybe it was the Germans. I don't remember.
The Germans.
What's that in your trousers, Tommy? So I think. I have no idea why I got off on that. But behind enemy lines, Mike DiRocco going to join us, who covers the Jags. We got Dan Muse from the Nashville Predators, of course. I don't believe in must-win games before you actually can be eliminated. I don't like that phrase. But how about a game that you desperately need 2 points in tonight for the Nashville Predators against Vancouver? Matt Miller from Bleacher Report, who covers the NFL, longtime NFL reporter, had some interesting comments yesterday as we were going off the air about Phillip Rivers being very interested. Quote, would love to come to the Titans. So we'll talk with him coming up in hour number three. Joe Rexroad, Hal Gill, we got a lot of stuff going on. But I think one of the biggest stories, and it's not just in Tennessee and in Nashville, but this James Wiseman situation. Again, I think you and I there covered this a couple of weeks ago when it first broke, maybe last Friday maybe, and the NCAA has sort of handed down its punishment to James Wiseman. If you don't know the story, James Wiseman was a freshman here at Ensworth? Is that correct?
Yes, he was a freshman at Ensworth before.
So then he moves his family to Memphis, and Penny Hardaway uses some money, to $11,000, to help him and his family move to Memphis to come play for Penny Hardaway's high school team. But at the time, Penny Hardaway had donated money to Memphis to build some facilities
or
Hall of Fame.
So he's now a booster.
So he's a booster, which again, as we discussed the first part of this story when it first came out, Penny Hardaway is the guy who did something wrong here, not the player or the family. And Penny Hardaway is the guy who should be suspended for this and not the player. Well, they handed down the punishment from the NCAA officially. James Wiseman will be suspended 12 games, which I guess if you follow all of the letters of the law and everything from the NCAA matches up. We can argue about how stupid the rule is, but it does match the correct punishment for this particular act. But the more interesting, I thought, punishment in all of this. So he will be eligible, I guess, against South Florida in January 12th, I think, is the date. And it's going to cost him, he's played a few games and they could have sat him earlier and maybe had some time served, but that didn't happen. The other thing that happened here is the NCAA came in and said, you need to pay back $11,500, but all this money is going to go to charity, to which my brain immediately goes, well, isn't that just a fine for a college athlete who didn't have the money in the first place? And here's what's going to happen now. That means either he's just going to get it from a booster again.
Exactly.
Or, and this is what I would do if I was him, I would go get, and I think Golic Jr. said this, and I think it's a great idea, so I want to give credit where I got it from. Go get a student loan. Mm-hmm. You're about to make millions of dollars in whatever, June next year, when you get picked number one, two, or three. Go get a student loan for the 11-5, pay it all back, and then just sit on it for six, seven, 8 months until you become a millionaire. Then you can just pay it all back in one fell swoop. So it's not like he's going to be in, he's not going to be like starving tonight. You know, like that's the good news in all of this is that there are ways around this. But it just feels like, once again, Derek, that the NCAA sees something that happens, a transgression, and the most vulnerable and most illogical part of the equation is the one that gets punished the most, which is the player. Like Memphis or Penny Hardaway or anybody else could have been fined this because they were the ones who were sort of making the mistakes. And James Wiseman was just trying to do right by his family, I guess. And it makes no sense to me. He can't get a job. He's legally not allowed by the NCAA to go get a job to make money that he has to pay back now. And it makes no sense.
It's just the dumbest crap I've heard. Obviously, the young man's parents or mom at the time didn't have enough to just shell out $11,000, $11,500. I don't think a lot of people got enough to shell out just $11,000 at one time. And then, I mean, in regards to the move, and then you're asking him, oh, by the way, we know you're going to make millions, so pay the money back or, you know, give the money to charity. And then Penny Hardaway is, unless I'm mistaken, there's nothing that's going to happen to Penny. To my understanding, there's nothing happening to Penny.
Right.
That is the dumbest stuff that I've ever heard. Like, the guy that gave him the money, then ultimately is the coach.
Who was the booster.
Yeah. Nothing happens to him whatsoever. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
Other than him having to go in front of the camera and say this and say that. Nothing happens to them and all this time, the young man gets suspended. Not only gets suspended, his family finds out that the NCAA says you got to pay $11,500 back. How dumb can you be? Hey, James, I pay the fine for you.
Also,
I pay it for you.
Well,
that's just the stupidest thing in the world.
Well, also telling you that you're not allowed to have a job.
Because that's what it is, a fine.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. And you're not allowed to have a job. And by the way, all NFL fines go to charity, too. Like most fines
exactly.
In the professional ranks go to charities, too. So it does just sort of amount to a fine at this point. So we're going to fine you. We're totally okay fining a college athlete, but you can't have a job. You can't go sign autographs and get a sponsorship deal because that rule hasn't kicked in yet, the name, image, and likeness.
Uh-huh.
You can't go do, like I guarantee you he could go hang out at some barbecue joint in Memphis and get, you know, people would come sign autographs.
Or, so quick.
Yeah, in no time. And so, again, but he's not allowed to do any of that.
Yeah.
And now now he's going to miss a third of the season, probably a third of his entire college career because, let's face it, he's leaving after the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. He's a good enough player. I just don't. And I'm not trying to make this a bigger societal discussion because I think it sort of applies to every walk of life, but the most vulnerable people in our country are the ones who get hit. It is the young 18-year-old kid who's the one who has to carry the load on this when the guy who made $120 million as a coach
he gets to walk away
as a player and he's actually the coach of the team where you could come in and say, "All right, Penny, 10-game fine and suspension for you." Nobody would have a problem with that.
Exactly. I don't think Penny would have a problem with that.
No,
in the big scheme
not.
Of things, if you're not going to punish the young man, if you're not going to fine the young man, and you say, "Well, Penny, you know what? You're suspended for 10 games, and you got to pay the $11,500." I'm pretty sure Penny would be like, "Okay, as long as if he really cares for James the way he says he does, and I'm not saying that he doesn't. He obviously does, but." If that is indeed the case, Penny would say, "Okay, all right, I pay it. My assistant coaches, I believe, can handle, you know, the 10 games while I'm on the side, you know, while I'm out of the building."
You make a great point. It's like I guarantee you, Penny would be like, "Yeah, I'll pay you $20,000.
Exactly. Just don't let the young man play.
Like it just and again in the grand scheme of things, the suspension itself. Doesn't violate the it doesn't go above and beyond the rules. It's in lockstep.
With
the NCAA's rules, like, hey, this is the amount of games for this level of money or whatever, like these levels of transgressions. So they're not, the NCAA has not gone over and above as far as the suspension goes. And frankly, the suspension is what it is. I don't like the rule. I don't like that is the result of an act like this, but it is the rule. And so the suspension, it's kind of hard to argue the suspension. It is the pay back the $11,000 that we all know you didn't have in the first place, while also telling you that you're not allowed to go earn revenue. And so if you're going to scream and yell about how these athletes shouldn't get paid and the education is good enough and oh, scholarship is just enough compensation, which I understand still a it's a smaller percentage today than 15 years ago. But if you're going to be that way about this topic and you feel that way, then you cannot also then support fining college athletes, essentially.
Even if they wanted to say, because you're right, it is lockstep with, you know, how the NCAA go about their business as far as rules and everything. Yes, it is.
Rules but, stupid.
Yeah,
whatever.
The rules stupid, but it is what it is. And I get it. It was a violation of NCAA rules, and, you know, he had to, you know, feel the repercussions of it. There was consequences to, you know, his parents getting the money. I get all that. But even if you say, I'm just tripping about the money and the fine.
That's what I'm saying.
The suspension.
Yeah, that's...
Either do one or the other. Don't suspend a young man for 10 games and then fine him on top of that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, if you're gonna say, well, James, just pay the fine, which one do you want? Do you want the 10 games or do you want to pay the fine? Let the young man or his parent decide, you know?
Yeah.
Or put them all in the room, coach in the room, everybody. And listen, these are the two things. We can suspend him for 10 games or we can fine him 11-5, because basically that's what it is, a fine, and he could donate it to a charity of his choice. Which one do you guys want to do? Which one? Because both of them would be lockstep.
And I see what you're doing there. You're trying to give them an option.
Because there has to be something. It's lockstep with the rules.
To me, like the money part of this is what I don't. I have
that's what I don't. I don't like that part.
I don't want to give him the choice. I want to give him the suspension because that's in the rule book.
Uh-huh.
The other stuff doesn't. It's just so hypocritical to me that it just. Like, again, I understand there's rules, and if you violate those rules, there needs to be consequences. I get it, even if we hate the rule. Todd Gurley signing autographs, we hate the rule. We think it's stupid. He got a 4-game suspension for signing some autographs. We all think it's a stupid rule. It's why we're changing the rule. It's why name, image, and likeness is going to be a thing in college athletics here coming very soon. But I just think it's the money is the part that I'm frustrated with because, like, again, where's he going to get the money? If he's going to get the money, he's going to go get it from a booster or coach or whoever.
Or he got to take out a loan. We know he can pay it back, but still, loan for $11,000. Seriously.
Now, in the grand scheme of things, when he gets his first number one overall pick contract, again, he's going to be able to pay it right back.
And
it's going to be fine. It's not like this. It just is when it feels like there is something, you know, sort of out of whack, which is why we're going to the name, image, likeness conversation in the first place. You're telling young people you cannot have jobs. You can't go work at a bar. You can't go be a bartender or wait tables or do anything because you're not allowed to. I'm not allowed to sign autographs or get a sponsorship, even though I guarantee you James Wiseman could get a sponsorship in the city of Memphis.
Of course.
Like in 2 seconds. It wouldn't be big. I think everyone believes that these...
No, James Wiseman right now can get a sponsorship for a 6-figure deal because they know he's a number one.
I don't know, six figures.
No, listen.
You got to get ROI on that, though.
No, what I'm saying is this.
He's not going to make $100,000 in business for a company.
What I'm saying is this. He will, if they are projecting him the number one pick or top three pick, that 6-figure deal will come eventually down the line. So if I get him, so if I get him in the front end and say, hey, listen, we'll give you the 6-figure deal because we know you're leaving. We know you're going to be the number one or number two or three pick. So eventually, if we come back after the draft and ask you for a deal, it might be even more.
And I agree that we know. And that's
not for everybody.
Yeah, and I think in basketball, it's going to be a far bigger dollar figure. Like, I think in football.
It wouldn't be a six-figure deal.
I think in football,
no.
the people that think that these players in football are going to get these massive marketing contracts and sponsorship contracts are just lying to themselves about the market value of 99% of college football players. Tua is worth probably a 6-figure marketing contract. Trevor Lawrence might be. Tim Tebow would have been worth a ton of money as a marketing concept. Johnny Manziel would have been worth a lot to a college station company. But Jonathan Taylor, one of the best running back arguably that we've seen in however many years, that guy's not a national brand. You cannot use Jonathan Taylor to sell, like, you know, whatever.
At this point in time,
not until you get to the NFL. And that's just because people don't know as much about a Wisconsin running back as they do the New York Giants running back. And so I think people have a very skewed perception of, we toss around like, oh, we're going to, Tua's going to get a $600,000 contract from Dreamland Barbecue? Like, and Marquise, you've been down there. You can, like, Dreamland's not going to make the $600,000 back.
Nah, I love some Dreamland, but they ain't going to make no $600,000.
Well, and Saw Soul Kitchen, baby. You saw that Saw Soul Kitchen guy won World Chef of the Championship.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's my boy down there. You Saw Soul Kitchen. You can have your Dreamland, dog. That's like Chick-fil-A being overrated. Dreamland, overrated. Just saying. It's good. It's good. It's not sauce.
Hey, people that love Dreamland, you can add Braden Gall.
Dude, I took Braden Gall. I took my 18-month-old daughter on a way down to Gulf Shores, and we made sure to make our pit stop at Dreamland in Birmingham.
See,
so I like it, but
see,
it's not
if
sauce,
if you would have followed
baby.
It up with some Archer balls, I would have, you know.
That's good. That's a good point. All right, so we got to take a break here, but let's continue this, because I think there's one other point to all of this that we need to consider, and it might be controversial, but I want to see what you guys think of that. When we come back, James Wiseman for Memphis, probably the number one pick in the draft, suspended 12 games, has to pay back $11,000. Is it fair? If you want to chime in, we'll take your calls. But I've got one more angle on this that I think will be controversial, and I'll explain when we return. Morning Drive. So there will be a theme.
Awesome, man.
There will be a theme on the show today.
Is this a love song?
It is.
Who is this?
This is Dan and Shy. I guess that's how you pronounce. Yeah, Shy. I saw the
message. Don't ask me, man.
I know. You wouldn't know. I saw him at CMA. A CMA fest?
Oh, that's why I wouldn't
you
know.
Went and got this song on your iPod.
I was like, what song is this? Everybody's singing it?
I said iPod.
There's no more CDs, Dad.
Yeah, exactly.
You nano?
Wow. Is it a Grammy-nominated song or band?
It is a group. It's two dudes, two country singers. And yeah, they were at CMA fest. I heard this song for the first time. And when I was looking at the Grammy nominations, I looked at them and I'm like, oh, I remember that song.
So
that
the song was awesome. Got nominated?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right,
the group did too.
Marquise will be playing all kinds of Grammys. He came in this morning and he goes, Braden, your boy got nominated. I go, who? He goes, yeah. Tyler Childers. I go, that's you're damn right he got nominated because he's freaking awesome.
Yeah, I think he's
awesome.
Nominated for two or three.
Yeah,
I think most of the country awards that for the Grammys are he's nominated for.
Yeah, and I know Derek doesn't like anything with some twang to it, but.
I do. I like Sturgill Simpson.
He's not nominated.
Tyler Childers, well, Sturgill's already got like three Grammys, but Tyler Childers is on Sturgill's label.
Yeah, that's right. Sturgill already got three. That's right.
Skins on the wall.
Yeah, skins on the wall.
He got more than Nas, so kudos to him.
Sound in the Fury, baby. No, Tyler Childers is on Sturgill's label, so Sturgill found this guy and launched him because they're both from a small town in Kentucky, and they both kind of came up together. And so Sturgill's put this guy on his record. He's opening for Sturgill at Bridgestone Arena.
That's what I'm talking about.
And dude, Tyler Childers will
I'm telling you this.
Light you up with some language, man.
Sturgill and I together got three Grammys. That's what I'm talking about.
Me too. Morning Drive and Sturgill. Although
three Grammys.
Ours would be Emmys, I think. It'd be a different category.
We got three Grammys together.
All right, one more quick point here because we got a Titans injury report to get to, and then Mike DiRocco, top of the hour, talk Jags. I think one of the – and you guys tell me if I'm wrong here. I think these types of scandals are good for college basketball in one way. It draws, and especially for us, like last night you had Belmont beat Lipscomb in the Battle of the Boulevard, 6-point game, you know, just a great traditional basketball thing for the city of Nashville. Tennessee Volunteers are already better than we anticipated into the top 25 already, a big win over Washington over the weekend. I just think college basketball is sort of surging right now, and I think having the entire nation, I think Penny Hardaway is good for college basketball in the state of Tennessee. I don't always agree with what he's doing, but he's doing it in the best interest of building his brand and his program. I get why and what and how he's doing it out there, but I think the scandals are part of the charm of college basketball now. If Will Wade is still employed at LSU after going through an FBI wiretap where we have evidence of you specifically talking about offering money to a player who is like on the team and you still are employed, this is like that's through the looking glass stuff here where you're just – it's totally fine to just be busted on an FBI wiretap.
It depends on how he
paying
said
players.
It. It's how he said it.
I honestly don't think it is. I think LSU said if we just look people in the face and lie about it enough, we'll get away with it. Sound familiar? So I think LSU is just willing to no pun intended here, to wade through it all and just get out the other side and be like, no, we got our guy. And Penny Hardaway is doing this, like he kind of doesn't care what other people think. He's kind of doing what he wants to do. He's drawing attention to Memphis basketball and to the state of Tennessee. And maybe it's not in a good way, but right now, nationally, people are supporting James Wiseman.
Yeah.
And we're on James Wiseman's side here.
And that's what you, I think as a head coach, and that's what you want because, you know, he knows there's nothing he can do about it. But Penny, I mean, Penny should have known. There should have been a different way he went about doing all this.
I agree.
As far
with
as
that.
Getting him and his parents to Memphis, there should have been a different way because he knew.
But it wouldn't have been wrong if he hadn't have given money to the Hall of Fame thing at Memphis.
Exactly.
As a booster.
Absolutely. He had already given money. I believe he had already given money to Memphis, so he can't then go ask for the money back. So knowing that you
give me that Hall of Fame,
give me that money back until I can get Wiseman down here, and then we can kind of hold that check for a minute. Hold
Wait,
that check.
Don't,
Do not
can you not
cash,
cash
the
that?
Check. Yeah, hold that check. The he's money already, don't get in the bank until another month or two.
He's,
so hold
he's,
that check.
He's got to go to my check-ins and my savings. You know, so.
He's got a like a GPS tracker on
James's
like, truck. The family truck just pulled in.
So don't cash that check for another couple of days.
See, it says delivered on the 20th. It's the 21st. So I'm just calling to see what's the status like.
See, here's
like right
the
now?
Thing: my check-in and my savings and my check-ins. Kind of off balance right now, so if you could just hold it for a minute so I could transfer some of the money from my savings to my check-ins, and then you can have it.
And you know it takes three business days.
And if I'm that person and Penny Hardaway's telling me that, I'm like, yeah, whatever, dude. Like, you got 120 mil in the bank. Not counting your little Penny Nike money, man.
Yeah, but this is where, Penny should have known that, there could be a potential violation. If indeed, because he's already donated the money, if indeed he paid the money to get his family to Memphis, there should have been a different way, because I'm pretty sure there are a bunch of loopholes in these rules. There should have been a way where he could have gotten him to Memphis.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a complicated one because it's outside the purview of the NCAA.
He was going to become the head coach, but still.
But he was definitely angling for it.
Absolutely.
Like, we knew he wanted the job. And the caller asked about Chase Young, Ohio State defensive end, who got some money and then paid it back to the agent. Again, the same question. Like, to the caller's question, I don't think there's a huge difference. But again, it was a significantly smaller amount of money, so it's two games, which is still like whatever 10, 12, 15% of your season in college football. This isn't a 30-year season. I understand that, but the amount of money was significantly smaller. Now Chase Young has apparently paid that money back to the agents, but again, where'd he get that money?
Exactly.
Where's Chase Young getting the money?
Absolutely.
He's not allowed to have a job at Ohio State. He's not allowed to sign autographs and make any money off of his name, image, and likeness. So how the hell did he get whatever, a couple thousand dollars or whatever to pay back to the agent?
And if his family...
You get it from a booster?
If his family didn't need the money in the first place, then why take the money?
And the other...
You see the angle I'm going for? It's like, if you didn't need the money, why take the money? And maybe your son took the money without you even knowing.
Although I will say, I've never seen a human being...
Being
offered like a stack of cash, and the person's like, nah, I'm good.
No,
like, I've never seen
that,
anybody
but,
who's like, no, I'm cool.
But if if I have a kid, and say if DJ decided, he was going to finish out football, and he was this highly recruited guy, and I, being in the position I'm in, and a booster say, somebody says, we're going to give you money, I'm going to say, no, I don't need it. Why are you?
You're in a different situation.
Now you're putting my son in a position where it's going to hurt him down the line. So I don't. Why are you trying to pay me?
Two things there. Not everybody.
And everybody's not like
right.
me.
Everybody has the financial situation you have. But more importantly, not everybody would have the wherewithal to look at that and go, you know who the only person would get punished in this equation is? Not the parent who okays it, not the booster who pays for it, but the only person who gets hurt in this would be DJ. Would be the kid, and the kid's the one person who's not allowed to go make any money. So the Chase Young situation is a little different because he was at Ohio State when it happened. That's the difference. Like, that's the major difference here is that he was talking to an agent while at Ohio State. So while he was a current student athlete at the university, this was while James Wiseman was like a 15-year-old kid in high school. He wasn't at Memphis at the time. So I don't believe he had committed to Memphis at the time. He certainly hadn't signed. And Penny wasn't the coach. He was just a booster, which is why this is an issue in the first place. So I don't know. I think it's convoluted. But the idea that the public is sort of rallying around James Wiseman on this issue in general, Chase Young, Todd Gurley, Johnny Manziel, all these different athletes, the public sentiment is now on the side of the athlete, which has changed in the last 15 years. That is why I think it's, again, I'm not saying it's good for the sport, But the scandals are sort of part of the charm of college sports.
We're talking about Memphis.
And we're not talking about... Yeah, exactly. We're talking about Memphis basketball on national radio shows all across the country. And that is a good thing for Memphis basketball in general. But it's also... When I say scandals, I'm not talking about Baylor and Penn State here.
Yes.
I'm not talking about Joe
Mixon. We're talking about something small.
I'm talking about pay-for-play NCAA violations. I think those types of scandals, the DeAndre Ayton thing at Arizona, Will Wade at LSU, there is a... When you become a college sports fan, you sort of know that you're going to get these USC-Reggie Bush situations every now and then. And that it's going to be scandalous, and people are going to overreact, and then we're going to take sides. And it's part of the chaos and imperfections of the system. Hopefully we're working to fix some of those imperfections of the system. So running way behind already this morning. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. We'll come back and talk a little Titans here as the injury report came out. Very good news for Tennessee Titans fans. We'll get to that when we return right here on Morning Drive. NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame show. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 10 until 12:30 p.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stellman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 12:30 to 2:30 p.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by RumbleOn.com. We're sitting in those studios right now, by the way. Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. I had some of that last night, by the way. So there you go. Look at me working in all the sponsors. Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on Morning Drive. And the injury report comes out yesterday for the Tennessee Titans. And I think it's pretty good news. Largely, this is really important stuff for the Titans because I think Corey Davis, full participant in practice. Jarrell Casey, full participant in practice. Jayon Brown, full participant in practice, three of the most important players on the team. Delanie Walker returned to the practice field on Wednesday, and they sounded optimistic about him playing with the ankle injury, but it feels like maybe there's a little less optimism around Delanie Walker. But I think if you're going to – if you're sitting at 5-5 with six games to play, four in the division, this team can't afford serious injuries, and it's already lost its – it's arguably its best cover corner for the year in Malcolm Butler. It cannot afford any more major injuries. So to see all these guys coming back, I think it's hugely optimistic for the Titans' defense in particular with Brown and Casey coming back.
Yeah, considering the road ahead of them. You know, Jacksonville, they have players on the offensive side that can, you know, do damage with their receivers. And I think if you are not able to stop Leonard Fournette, that makes your job even harder, even though he hasn't been the back that they've, you know, wanted him to be consistently. And maybe it's just a combination of everything where teams kind of load up on a run and force the Jacksonville Jaguars to pass the ball. So Jacksonville has guys, they have guys on the offensive side of the ball that can play. So having Jarrell Casey back, having Jayon Brown back, those things are important to this defense. A defense for the last two games have given up a lot of points. Uncharacteristically, they have. So to get those guys back, you know, they can't afford to have another guy in the secondary go down. Yeah. Like you said, they've lost arguably their best cover corner, Malcolm Butler.
And it's really the only major injury that I can think of. Like, they're sort of surprised. Like, obviously, the last couple games, they haven't been surprisingly healthy. They haven't had Jayon Brown, Jarrell Casey, Malcolm Butler, Delanie Walker, Corey Davis. Those are five of the top-tier athletes on the team. But getting all those guys back now, it's very different. I just don't think there's not a lot of margin for error with the Tennessee Titans. And if you're going to take one, two, three starters off the roster for the rest of the year, that may be the difference between them going, you know, 10-6 or 8-8 and not even being in the conversation, or maybe being in a game in the final week of the season to win the division. So,
well, they're going to need all these guys. Again, they're going to need all these guys moving as the season progresses, these last six games of the season. They're going to need all hands on deck. They're going to need to be as healthy as possible this time of the season because they have four of their last six games are divisional games. I believe they got two with Houston, one with Jacksonville this upcoming weekend, and then another with the Indianapolis Colts. So if they're going to push for a playoff spot, this is the time they need to do it. They need to do it fully healthy. So getting those guys back, in particular, the guys on defense, because of what we've seen the last two games, what they – and granted, they played against Kansas City, who was a high-powered offense. You know, so you knew there was going to be some points scored. But these last two games, they haven't played the way that they're accustomed to playing on the defensive side of the ball. Now, offensively, you know, I think even though Delaney hasn't been there and this team has continued to play well, they still need his leadership, I believe. They still need him to be that guy, because the last two games, the Panthers and the Chiefs, they've averaged around 20-something points a game, 22, 23 points a game, somewhere around there, and that's better than what they had been averaging.
Yeah.
So not to say that they, you know, that it's a must that they have him, but I think they're going to need him as they wind down this last six games, because they're going to lead us. They're going to need his leadership, and then they're going to, like you said, they're going to need all hands on deck anyway.
Yeah,
but they're going to need his leadership heading into, on the offensive side of the ball, headed into this last stretch run.
Yeah, the phrase that just keeps coming to mind is margin for error, which means you don't have any margin for error against the Jaguars at home. You got to win a game. You can't really gain anything with this game, but you could lose everything. You got the Colts and Texans.
This is a must-win for them.
It's huge, and frankly, the entire division this weekend, because it starts tonight with the Colts and the Texans. We'll get into that a little bit. Also, a Phillip Rivers update. What is the actual deal with Phillip Rivers and the Tennessee Titans? Is there more to the story? Well, some rumors swirling yesterday. I got some information for you. Did a little digging yesterday. Got a little nugget for you.
A little digging? Just a little, you had to dig deep?
Yeah, not like I didn't open up a gold mine and go all the way down and start panning for gold, but I got a little nugget for you.
You have to bring out one of those big, you know, trucks and dig.
No, I was like the old lady on the beach with like metal detector.
Use
my hand and found a little nugget. I got a little something for you. So we'll do that, and then we'll look at the Colts and Texans, which, again, I'll give you a number on what that game means tonight as well. We'll do all that when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. You're listening to Morning Drive here in the Wholesale Links Studios, presented by Mount Juliet and powered by Rumble On. Not presented by Mount Juliet. That would be like the whole city.
Yeah.
Presenting it. Wholesale Link Mount Juliet, powered by RumbleOn.com. I'll get it right.
There we
Derek
go.
Derek Mason, Braden Gall here on a Thursday edition. Thursday Night Football gets started tonight. Texans and Colts. We'll get to that game coming up in just a minute. The number you need to know there. You guys got your pens, your pencils out? Because
pencils.
Because the winner of this game tonight will have a 70, according to ESPN's FPI, a 74% chance to win the division. That's a pretty good, that's a hefty number there. So this division, the AFC South, up for grabs in this particular weekend of football, with the Titans and the Jags playing, and of course with the Texans and the Colts getting started tonight. That should be a fascinating watch tonight. I'm assuming all Titans fans tuned in pretty tightly on that one. So we'll get into that game in just a second, but I wanted to relay what I think I learned yesterday about Phillip Rivers. Rumors, and we're going to talk to Matt Miller, who I guess broke the story yesterday that there's lots of interest from Phillip Rivers in the Tennessee Titans, that he would love to play in Tennessee. He's from Alabama, of course. I guess, you could buy like 50 acres in like Huntsville, Alabama, and make the same commute he makes now, like from San Diego up to L.A. If he really wants to drive an hour in his fancy van that he's got with all of his kids or whatever, he can go buy a giant ranch in Alabama and drive to Nashville if he wants to.
Two giant ranches.
Yeah, exactly. For the amount of money it would cost for like a one-bedroom apartment in L.A. So here's what I learned yesterday. From what I understand, Phillip Rivers would like to return to the Chargers. That would be his priority. That the Chargers are his top choice, that he would like to re-sign if they would like to have him for a few more years. 1-2, bridge contract, whatever. If the Chargers are not where he plays next year, it sounds like his first choice and the only choice he really wants is the Tennessee Titans. So from what I understand, it is Chargers 1, Titans 2, nobody else 3 on Phillip Rivers' priority list. So, what do you make of that?
One, two, or retirement. Philip is not ready to retire. I tell you that right now.
I don't think so either.
Yeah, I don't. I tell you that right now. Right at this point in time, and this happens with a lot of players. If they've been in a league a while, and they're coming to maybe those last, you know, 3-4 years of a, you know, of their career, and they know it. They have in their mind toward the end, whether they're talking to their family or their representatives, okay, yes, it'd be great for me to come back here, but, you know, this is where I want to go. This, if I don't go to these, like my last year in Baltimore, I knew it was going to be my last year. Because the whole collective bargaining was going on, and I knew
you got traded that year, right?
No, I got released. But I knew that because of the collective bargaining, and they had already prepared us for this. Once this deal gets signed, there are going to be a lot of veteran guys released because of how everything kicks in. So I knew that I was going to be eventually released because I had just signed a 2-year extension. And that second year was worth a lot of money. So I knew.
Sucks how business works sometimes when you just get cut.
Absolutely. When you just cut, you get cut and you are just sent on your way. But I knew it. And my thought process was either I'm staying with the Ravens or trying to go back to net, go back to Tennessee to play to finish out my last year, or I'm not playing anywhere. That was my thought. Like, it's either Ravens, Titans, or nothing.
Yeah.
Well, when it came time to do Ravens, Titans, or nothing, the Ravens, you know, they didn't say no. They just said, you know, go and do your test the market, find a place. If not, then, you know, we can possibly try to work. If things don't work out with us getting a free agent, we could possibly try to work some things out. The Titans said no. They had their receivers. That was funny. That was really funny.
Wait, tell me what year this was. I don't want to be.
This was 2010, somewhere around there. I think it was 2010.
I mean, I don't really want to rip on the Titans, but I kind of do.
They said they had their guys, and they were trying to re-sign Chris Johnson, I think, at the time, too.
So this is your last year in Baltimore, yeah. 2010. Okay.
I went from saying it's either Baltimore or Tennessee to saying, okay, I go to the Jets because the Jets offered me a contract. And the Jets was offering me a 2-year deal, you know, to play, to extend my career. So I said yes. That's how things sort of work when you know you're not ready to retire is that you have in your mind set on this is where I want to go. And if it's not these two places right now, I'm done. But then you get closer and closer and closer to that date. And then you start to think like, man, I want to play, but these two teams are not, you know, stepping up. There's always going to be a third team that comes in. And you're going to say yes because you still want to play. It wasn't one of the places that you thought you were going to go. I
feel like the Chargers are going to re-sign him.
I think the Chargers will.
I think they want him to retire a Charger, play every game in a Charger uniform.
That would be the smart thing to do. I think that would be the respectful thing to do. I think that would be the honorable sort of thing to do. That would be one of those things where, you know, we respect and appreciate what you've done for this organization. So we're not just going to cut you. We're going to let you retire here. So play a few more years. You can retire here, and you'll go down as the greatest Charger ever to play.
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah, just, I mean, ahead of Dan Fouts, I would say.
Yeah, Fouts, LaDainian Tomlinson.
I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson probably is the best of all time, I guess. Kellen Winslow. Let me ask you this, though. So let's do a D-Mace dissection of the D-Mace career here.
Uh-huh.
So your final season, which there was only one more year after your final year in Baltimore, obviously, uh-huh. you split time with Houston and the Jets. You caught 19 passes for 170 yards.
Ooh, that's great.
It's like an 8-yard catch average. super ironically. This particular year that you just said, you laughed about how the Titans had their receivers. I think it's one of the only times they've ever had a 1,000-yard receiver. Nate Washington, that's the year Nate Washington went 74 catches for over 1,000 yards. They had now, they also had Lavelle Hawkins, Damian Williams, and Kenny Britt that year, who had 47, 45, and 19 receptions, 17 receptions, mm-hmm. respectively. Chris Johnson caught 57 passes that year.
It was
he only had 1,000 yards rushing, but did have a 1,000-yard receiver that year.
It was the 09 season. That when I got cut from the Ravens, it was that next following season where I think they didn't have a 1,000-yard receiver. It wasn't until the next year.
This was 2011 I was looking at.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. The year after your Ravens career ended.
Yeah.
They had a 1,000-yard receiver with Nate Washington.
That next following year.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The year when I got released, they didn't. Going into that season, they didn't. That's what I'm saying.
Let me look here. They did not the year before
Ravens. Exactly. They did not have one. And
Then, what I'm saying is you laughed that they didn't have receivers, and then Nate Washington had 1,000 yards.
But
like, that's the only time they've ever had a 1,000-yard receiver, yeah, like since you, basically, yeah. right? It's like that. I mean, I think.
That and then.
I think Kendall Wright. Kendall Wright had 100 catches.
But he didn't have a 1,000 yards,
I thought he did. But
he might have, but then Delanie Walker had 1,000 yards.
Yes, and I almost don't put those guys in the same category. It's 2013, Kendall Wright, 94 catches, 1,079 yards.
Yeah.
But basically, it's like you, Drew Bennett, Nate Washington, Kendall Wright, and that's it. Like 4 seasons since the Titans have come here that we've had like a 1,000-yard true receiver, tight end.
But the premise of it was,
I just like busting on you.
When you get to that point, you have two teams, and then when you figure out those two teams are not stepping up to the plate the way you want them to, it goes from I'm retiring to, well, I'm not ready to retire.
Maybe I'll play for the Jets.
Maybe I'll play for the Jets. Maybe I'll play for Houston.
How low do you have to get in your life to still play for the Jets?
You have to be really
pretty
low.
Pretty bad?
Yeah, it has to be pretty. Yeah, you have to be pretty bad. Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
You have to just be like, man, okay, I'll play. I want to play. I collect a check.
How honestly, like this far removed, how honestly, over 10 years removed, are you bitter, honestly, that the Titans didn't bring you back to retire as a Titan?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
I let that be known. I will not ever.
It's not healthy.
Yeah,
not healthy.
I would not ever sugarcoat that. I would not ever sugarcoat that.
Who was in charge at that time? It wasn't Floyd, right?
No, it wasn't Floyd.
Yeah,
it was.
He was with the Patriots.
Not Reinfeldt, but it was one of them. It was one of them.
Because just hold on to that bitterness, Derek. Don't ever let it go.
No, because
just hold
even
on to it. Let it fester.
Even before I re-signed with the Baltimore Ravens, I wanted to come back here because there was a point where my contract had ended and they were trying to figure out, are they going to re-sign me or not? They did re-sign me to a 2-year deal, but.
So there was another chance you had a couple years earlier to come back?
Yeah, that was the year I really wanted to sign with the Tennessee Titans. Like, I held off for as long as possible. And
because that would have been coming off the 08 season when they were 13-3, and then 09 season they had the 2,000 yards with Chris Johnson.
Yeah, that's the
right?
year where they were trying to re-sign Chris Johnson, and we were like, okay, I play for the minimum because my thing was I just wanted to retire here.
Right.
I wanted to finish a year and retire here and let it be that. And I think it was Reinfeldt or one of them. They were like, we're trying to do Chris's deal. I'm like, seriously.
How much did you really want?
Exactly. Like, I mean, I didn't want anything. I just wanted to be able to retire here. That's it. I just wanted to play a season, retire here, and that's it.
Can we blame Wizenhunt?
I blame Wizenhunt and Reinfeldt. whoever the GM was, they wasn't that smart because.
Yeah, right. Mike Reinfeldt was the GM for the 2019.
They wasn't that smart because look how that team went.
Well, they went 8-8.
Eight and eight, absolutely. And he ended up getting
now
fired.
Now he had 2,000 yards in 09, and then, yeah, you're right.
He ended up getting fired. So
a couple years later.
But no, that hasn't been a secret like I've kept bottled up.
Right.
I've let that be known. It is what it is. So, yeah, but it's over with.
No, I don't think you should let it go. I think you should hold on to that bitterness.
It will always be
let
there.
Let it drive you.
It would always be there. Always be there, but you know, it is what it is.
I'm always fascinated with athletes, and frankly, I talked about this a little bit last night on Smash for Live with Mikael Granlund and UC Saros more with Granlund as a skater. But like when you lose a game or you have a bad game, or in this case, sort of an off season decision, you know, do you let it motivate you, and do you think about it? Do you allow it to fester, or do you have to move on? Because, you know, on to Cincinnati.
No, you let it motivate
and
you.
And certain players are different. What they were talking about last night is there's some players that have to get it out of their system right away, and there's some players that need it for motivation for the next day.
I think every player, when you lose a game in a particular fashion, every player uses it as motivation, because you don't want to play that way the next game. So you try to do whatever it is, you know, so you don't play. So you use it as a motivation to play better and get better. That's only human nature. And, you know, for me, that's why I keep it. That's why I keep that part in me. And then people, you know, ask me, well, why did you retire? Not a time. Well, these are the reasons that I didn't.
Right.
And if I'm petty, then so be it. But these are the reasons that I didn't.
No, we are going to be the pettiest show
exactly.
on radio.
Because to me, they show they cared, because they say, yeah. You know what, we're going to re-sign you back. Even though the Titans at the time had an opportunity to. And that is the year where they didn't have a 1,000-yard receiver. And they were trying to play. And I get it. I get it. Chris Johnson, he deserves every dime he gets. He was one of the best back, if not the best back at that time.
And then he wasn't as good after that. I don't think he ran as hard after the contract.
Man, he wasn't trying to get hard. He wasn't trying to get hurt. I don't blame him.
Nope. Mike DiRocco covering the Jacksonville Jaguars. When we come back, behind enemy lines here on Morning Drive.